This is for Hefe.
Hello, welcome again to Taking It Down. We're the Alabama Takes Pop Culture Discussion Podcast. And subscribe to us. Give us a rating or review. Visit our site or go to the site and visit our Tee Public store for t-shirts, mugs, stickers, all the more. And for this week's Taking It Down, our two primary segments are about the Netflix horror series from creator Mike Flanagan, which is Midnight Mass, and the Sopranos movie on HBO Max, The Many Saints of Newark. We'll also do some brief thoughts, really quick thoughts on some trailers that have popped up online, and maybe a quick check-in on Squid Game. But here we are with the co-host, Adam Morrow and Donovan Runwald.
It's just great to be here. Yet again, here we are, another day.
Good to be here, Blaine.
It's great to be anywhere at my age.
It's great to be in the middle of college football chaos season. Not to derail us again with some college football talk, but man.
The blood was flying yesterday.
It was great.
Breaking news.
We got breaking news. We got news from last night, Saturday night. Tennessee fans reminded us all why we hate them so much. Just a good time.
Are you saying that there's no scenario where you wouldn't throw a golf ball at Lane Kiffin?
You got a point.
Oh, man. Him walking off the field and, like, not flinching. All the law enforcement who are, like, paid to be tough guys, right, flinch when this water bottle flies. Lane does not. He one hand catches it, drops it, and then throws his visor to the crowd. That's just like everything that you love and hate about the guy in 30 seconds.
That's true. Absolutely. Sums him up.
Donovan, do we dare retire the COVID segment?
If we've learned anything about, according to the New York Times, if we've learned anything about COVID, it's that we'll never retire the COVID section, but maybe it hibernates.
Okay, let's put it on hibernation and see what, and roll the dice. So there are lots of Eternals trailers everywhere. Are you guys seeing this whenever you open up Instagram or Twitter or anything? You're just seeing.
I've definitely seen the like Eternal sneak peek with like the monster and the laser eyes and all that.
Yeah, I'm seeing it everywhere. Television as well. And I've got to be honest, I'm not so sure I give a shit. I know we talked about Chloe Zhao being the director and what that. Back when we watched Nomadland, we were all about Eternals. But the more I see this trailer, I don't know. You guys may still be in. I don't think I am.
Do either of you have any like prior connection to the franchise, The Eternals?
That's one big reason. Yeah. And it reminds me way too much of The Inhumans, which I found to be horrible. But that was just a horrible show. It's no fault of The Eternals at all. I'm just reminded of it.
I am trying to envision, because I'm so excited based on the director. We loved Nomadland. I love Nomadland.
Yeah, we did.
I am so intrigued to see what she does with a Marvel budget. And as I've seen, because I'm like you, I've seen, I guess like you would expect, Marvel throwing their budget around a bit, lots of ads. And I was at first thinking, am I as excited as I was? And then I tried to imagine what a studio would do to cut Nomadland, like cut a trailer for Nomadland to try to get the general public psyched about it. It's like I don't know that the trailer is necessarily gonna show what the movie experience will be, or at least maybe that's hopeful thinking. I just don't know how you. I mean, it's almost like trying to imagine like what did the trailer for Badlands look like when Terrence Malick first made it. I'm not saying it's gonna be this Marvel movie's gonna be Badlands, but how do you communicate like what's great about both of those directors' style in a 30-second spot on television?
What did Turner and Hooch look like as an ad? You know, you keep thinking these things.
You do.
Say you heard it here first. The Eternals is Marvel's Badlands.
that will probably be true. I mean, relative to the rest of the whole thing, yeah.
Which leads me to ask, the Malick film or the Springsteen song?
Which came first?
Well, the Malick.
Well, Malick.
Yeah. Okay, so we also got a full trailer of Get Back. It's the Peter Jackson documentary on the Beatles, in case you have no idea. How could you not? My question to both of you is, what's this trailer offering that you didn't already know? Because we're all three of us are in on this.
I think Adam made a good point about trailers a second ago.
Which is? You want to paraphrase?
Which is, because you were saying, like, what's in this that you don't already know? And I don't think this is just here to get you excited, right? Like, it's just here to get you, like, pumped, and not just you, but also the general public pumped for this?
Some of the stuff that is shown in the trailer, even, like, I feel like I'm going to get to see visually a lot of stories that I've heard for years and years. Yeah. Like, is it John is kind of helping George with something?
Mm-hmm. With the song, like, something.
Right, right, right. You know, just throw in some filler lyrics until you've got it. Like, all that kind of stuff. And I just want to watch these guys hang out. I mean, yeah, that bit about Paul saying, well, in a few years are people going to say the Beatles broke up because Yoko sat on an amp. Like, he's saying that at the time. And so how is this all going to shake out? I don't know. Any footage of those guys, we talked about this with the Rick Rubin McCartney thing. Like, I mean, when they start breaking down those tracks, I'm ready to run through the wall. I'm so excited. So they don't have to. It's not a high bar. He's going to make the stuff look incredible, and I'll watch as much as he's got.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at these documentaries, too. Did you ever see They Shall Not Grow Old? It's incredibly long. Yeah.
Phenomenal doc. I will say, I'll plug a podcast I listened to this week. It's called Your Own Personal Beatles. It's two English guys, but they had, near and dear to my heart, Alistair MacLean of The Clientele, or as the British say, the Clientele, on to talk about his experience with the Beatles. And they talk about, Blaine, you laugh, but they laugh in the podcast. They're like, who says clientele? And he's like, oh, Americans do.
I had no idea. That's why I'm laughing. I can't fathom that.
They can't fathom that we say it like the rednecks that we are. But it's great. They kind of go through, like, what's your experience with this band that you can't escape, especially if you're a songwriter. But they spend a bit of time talking about the Peter Jackson doc and, like, trying to imagine, like, is he going through and having to, like, touch out all the cigarette smoke and try to get a clear picture. So, but very, very good listening ahead of the doc coming.
Well, that does cue me up for our surprise. Alistair is joining us next week on this podcast.
I thought long and hard about this while I was listening to this. I think I would be just totally, you know, like, people that no one else really, really gives a shit about that you'd be totally starstruck by.
Like Garrett McNamara, apparently, for me and you.
Oh, yeah. Exactly the same thing. Like, if I met this guy, I think I would just hug him and cry.
Well, let's get into our first big segment. It's Midnight Mass. Midnight Mass is a show on Netflix, which was released at the very end of September, but we held off on it, as it is one of Mike Flanagan's entries for the Netflix streaming service. If you don't know who he is, he's the creator and showrunner of The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor, both on Netflix. He's done other things. That's not all he's limited to, but that's my primary introduction to him. This show, Midnight Mass, is set on a small island populated by 127 people, and one of the townspeople is returning home just before a bad storm. He's returning due to some jail time. That's about it. Really all you need to know going in, I think. That's about it, and you get that in the first 3 minutes. Let's just start talking about it. Well, I'm going to do sidebars really quick, as quickly as I can, before we get in our discussion, and feel free to chime in, guys, on my rants here. This is a 7-episode show, at least. I think that's right. Yeah, well, I remember being thrilled about it being 7 episodes, because I knew I could get those done in, like, a couple weeks. So, Mike Flanagan was born in Salem, Massachusetts, which I find interesting. He said online that he's 3 years sober, so I'm not telling tales out of school there. He's... the opening episodes and citing off-screen incidents is coming from the heart. That's one of my little side notes I wanted to get out of the way. But here's the big one. I got spoiled on a big conceit of this show, and I am just livid. I was definitely livid when it happened. It was Slate. I'm going to call you out, Slate.com, you assholes. I was not digging for spoilers at all. I just typed in Midnight Mass. That's it. And right there in the headline, one of the first Google images with the headline under it was a spoiler. I didn't have to click on shit. It's not like I was digging around. And this is an issue I've been wanting to talk about on the show, and I'm bringing it up today because it fits perfectly. I am over and pissed at critics who feel this goddamn need to figuratively scream that they're the first to watch something and include key plot elements. And yeah, I know a show should work great even if you know elements of the plot. It's, you know, it's going to be magical if it's done well anyway. So it's a lot more about the idea that these goddamn critics or publications are putting big things in their headlines or tweets for clickbait. It's infuriating. And it's like, and there's even some that cannot even hold off a few hours. You get midway through a show and maybe a commercial runs, you check Twitter and they've already tweeted out something. They'll do this shit even before an episode is aired. And even some of the greats, like Alan Sepinwall, is starting to lean into this. It's exhausting, and I was not fishing for information. I know the show is 2 or 3 weeks old, so, but fuck me. Who has time to watch everything the night it airs? Anyway, you guys have any input on this little sidebar?
It's incredibly annoying.
It's got to be a symptom of the way that Netflix releases things too, right? Like you can watch it all at once. I'm not saying that's a fault of Netflix, but like, you remember the few years when people still gave a shit about music and like an album? You remember that?
Vaguely, yes, I do. God, I love music still.
That sweet spot when technology was good enough that you could really quickly get a leaked album, like within minutes if you wanted it.
Wow,
and
yeah.
So like, something, and now nobody cares because it's just like we're so inundated with stuff that unless you really love a band, you're not going to like BitTorrent the new. I remember BitTorrenting like a Beach House record early, but that doesn't really exist anymore. Anyway, the rush, once it leaked, people decided you had to write reviews based on the leak, right? Because your publication is going to be left behind if not. It's got to be like a strain of the same thing, right? To like the need to be first, the need to be leading the conversation, which is super annoying.
Yeah, I hate the need to be first in online stuff. Go ahead, Donovan. While you speak, I'm going to try to pull up a tweet from someone because I want to give them credit, but you go ahead.
There's that genre of like, we're being first. You've seen it like the explain the ending tweet or whatever, like, you, the viewer, could not figure out what was going on, so we're proving that we're first by getting our explain the ending thing out first.
Yeah, totally. That need to, I don't know, it's an annoying impulse, both in individuals and publications.
I'm sure everyone who works at a publication would actually probably agree with us. They're probably exhausted by the cycle.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Let me bring it full circle. I was spoiled by Slate, and then a writer from Salon.com, Katie Henriksen, I retweeted her this week from the Alabama Take, so you probably saw this if you're a follower of us. She wrote, I'll just quote her, "Can we please burn to the ground release date as the expiration date for music coverage?" And I love that too, because what are you supposed to, I hate the idea that you're supposed to stop talking about an album the Saturday after it's released. Friday was the day to do that. Because, and for us who are just small-time, do-it-yourself kind of guys, we don't mind talking about something that's about 2 or 3 weeks old. It gives us time to sit on it. We only get an album or two before its release date. And thank you, Grandstand Media. That's one of our outlets who've been so nice to us. And they sent us the Dean Wareham, right? They sent us that one, which we actually got to review on release date. Anyway,
I did not listen to the early stream like I could have on that one, and instead have spent time with it this weekend.
Really?
And I know it's great. And I know that's, you know, it didn't lose value. There are records that I listened to once on Friday or shows or whatever, and think that was good, and then don't think about it ever again. But a good one, like I think that Dean Wareham one is going to be, I'm going to pull it up again next week and then in the future and, you know, slowly live with this record. I mean, like the idea of having to have an opinion on, I guess, the marquee record coming out. I've turned this into a music discussion and I'm sorry. But
no, it fits perfectly.
The War on Drugs new record is coming out at the very tail end of the month. And like, I'm not going to have I will not have a solid idea how I feel about that one until like Thanksgiving, because I'm going to listen to it a billion times if it's it has a very low bar, because I love that band so much to get over for me to listen over and over and over and over again and then finally kind of live in the songs. And I know you can't do that if you're reviewing things, that time is not on your side, but still, That's where I think an honest opinion comes from.
Well, we've gotten a couple of albums about a month before their release date. So I guess you really could live with it and then like type up your review a few days before the actual release date. So we've been blessed on a couple like that. And our head music writer, Corey Hensel, has done really well with those. She of course, works like all of us, and she picks and chooses what she wants to review. But she's been really sweet about that. She liked the Dean album too, Adam.
I saw it was a positive review.
Yeah, yep. And she agrees with us on it. Yep. Yeah, got off on a little tangent, but that's something I've been wanting to bring up for weeks. I've had it in our show notes for a while now, and it just fit perfectly because I was spoiled on Midnight Mass on one key plot point that I think would have had. Okay, so knowing it and watching like episode 2 and 3 recently, knowing it, the show still worked. That's the good news because it's a pretty good show. I want to get more into it. Spoiler line drawn here for our listeners. So here we go. Spoilers ahead, maybe in a minute or two.
Here's a spoiler. There's no Midnight Mass. Jesus.
Yet. How many episodes have we each? How many episodes have we each watched? I've done 3. 2.
I'm at 2.
Yeah.
Excellent. Perfect.
I'm doling them out.
Okay. Well, let's just be real general, and then we can do spoilers. You like them?
It kept me watching.
Yeah, I am not always a fan of the scary thing coming out in October or late September, whatever. Sometimes I feel like genre, we've talked about this a lot off air, but anytime that genre takes over quality, which I think it does pretty often, especially in the horror or generally scary stuff genre, I'm out. But this, you know, I would have watched a show about a small island even if it wasn't supposed to be scary.
Boy, does this show have some serious Third Day vibes. Remember the Jude Law HBO show we covered a lot?
Yes. Jeez. That's I was thinking if so people heavy. Had, because I know people, I personally know people who have been super enthusiastic about the show, and like I talked about with that, with the Jude Law show, how much I enjoy, like, nature is scary, like something is naturally, not like something in the woods, but like there's a personification of man's old fear of what goes bump in the woods at night, like that whole kind of thing. I mean, it goes right back to like Wicker Man or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It even translates well into God is scary.
Yeah. And I only 2 episodes in, but I don't think, maybe there's a moment or two where they're leaning a little too heavily into making the Catholic, what he's saying, seem more ominous than it is. I don't know. I guess you have to lean a bit to get the scary effect.
It's going to be unfair to compare the two, but the settings are so striking in similarity from Third Day, that HBO show from last year, and this year's Midnight Mass. Donovan, what's your level of happiness that this show is not a deep dive into Texas A&M's creepy cheer practice? Are you over the moon?
I'm pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because Texas A&M is scary. You know, that's the other part of the folk horror genre, right? Like, people are scary and weird, too. And that's Texas A&M for you.
You know what? I'm sitting here thinking I would totally watch a documentary on their midnight cheer practice and just be creeped out by it and hate them even more. But
you didn't see Jesus Camp?
Yes, I did. I did watch Jesus Camp. Talk about a great documentary, yeah. So let's dive into Midnight Mass. The first episode, I thought, did a fine, okay job of balancing the act of setting the stage, but also keeping things moving. I've seen it done better, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that.
And it felt like the first episode really wanted to thematically discuss religion, returning, guilt, sin, resurrection, and all those are really ripe and great concepts. But with Mike Flanagan, I think it's a matter of how deep he's willing to go versus maintaining a captivating plot and to be scary, right?
And I think he's kind of walking that balance, right? I think you hit the nail on the head where sometimes he slows down his show maybe a little more than he needs to.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. No.
Just to, and I guess it's because he's swinging for the fences, right? Like, he's trying to talk about the big themes you just alluded to, but also I don't know. This is going to, I mean, it's a drama. It's really a drama at its heart, but it's kind of like,
mm-hmm.
what are these characters? Are these characters monologuing again?
I agree. And this, I think, may be Mike Flanagan's best of the trilogy, if we want to count them as such, with the two hauntings of, and then this one. This is by far his best. I would say heads and tails above the two hauntings. And here's why.
Interesting.
There are a few reasons. One is the character of Riley Flynn. That guy is just like a jewel in the rough. I've never seen this actor before. He has been in things, I think, kind of like CW-esque type shows, maybe, I'm thinking. He does have that look.
He's got that look.
But he is doing phenomenal work to me, just being settled into a place, but also not fitting into a place. And he's doing such good work. So that's my one reason. Second reason, I feel like Mike Flanagan is, this is maybe his most personal work yet. Obviously, which I mentioned earlier, he's 3 years sober, and that's part of the storyline here with Riley Flynn. And the third reason is that he shortened his episodes. So this one is 7 episodes, and I think the Hauntings ran 9 to 10, and they were probably an episode or two too long. And I think he's nailing it this time.
Bly Manor certainly was. It was one or maybe 2 episodes too long. I'm so interested that you're saying it's his best so far, just because...
Of the three, yeah.
Of the three, yeah. Because at least for the first 2 episodes that I've seen, this is probably, to me, the least scary.
Oh, by far.
There's elements of, you know, there's elements of menace or dread, but the other two, I felt more... The horror was much more ramped up in the other two, so I wonder if those are connected in any way.
I wrote these things down after watching only 2 episodes, so I haven't even started to comment on 3.
Okay.
The horror does inch, I wouldn't even say inch, I would say by a foot, you know, it goes up or farther in episode 3. And a lot more to reveal in episode 3, but I'm still all in. I'm just really digging this. It's maybe a personal thing because I find religion scary as fuck. It scares me to death. And I think it has a horrible effect on people. It's just been my opinion for years. I know a lot of people don't agree, and that's fine. And so he's also playing with religion being scary.
I think it's... I've been trying to kind of feel out the... Obviously, the minister who's shown up is gonna... You know, he's... Even in episode... Early on, he's the... kind of the menace that you're trying to figure out. I don't know.
Father Paul, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to gauge how we're supposed to feel about that because, you know, I mean, it kind of has the general reactions to established faith in that it's deeply important for some folks on the island. Mm-hmm. It's a part of their community. It's a part of their view on life. Other folks use it to manipulate. Like, I'm going to blank on the woman's name, who is the busybody. Yeah,
Bev Keen. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Clearly up to no good, just annoying. And that person, you know, emphasis on that person to the nth degree. And then you have people who, like you were talking about, Riley. I'm awful at names. Sorry, Riley is who's come back to the island, right?
Mm-hmm. Riley Flynn, yeah.
Who seems to be a genuine seeker in a lot of ways. That's mm-hmm. what the church would likely call him. So it seems to be hitting a lot of different archetypes. And, you know, it's bold. I don't know how into spoilers we want to get through 2 episodes, but...
Oh, for two, yeah. Let's do spoilers for 2 episodes, yeah.
Say the conversation at the immediately awkward 2-person AA meeting... You know, that's, like Donovan said, that's swinging for the fences to have that kind of, you know, because if you don't do it right, and I'm still not sure how right he did it, but it can be so trite to have people debate religion in a fictional show.
So you're not sure if he nailed it, but I'm going to go with yeah. I was invested in that scene a lot. I was leaning in. Like, what are they going to say next? What's their stance going to be? How are they going to back it up?
I think it's helped a lot by your earlier point. I was just nodding the whole time that the guy playing Riley is so good. and kind of just steals every scene that he's in this really subtle kind of compelling way.
Just like a cut of the eyes he'll do. And yeah. You're like, yeah, I know what he's thinking.
Yeah. He really helped that along quite a bit. I don't know. Maybe it worked because they're allowed to be in that scene specifically. They were allowed to be humans. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like they were, one was arguing for like one capital T truth and the other one was arguing for a different capital T truth and going after it. It was just like experiential kind of talk, I guess, which gives, if you're the guy writing it, that's an easier place to write from than with authority. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, it seems like, I was thinking something I do appreciate about the show is it takes religion seriously. It seems to, at least, so far.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
Because if it can't be scary unless you take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I have a half thought about Father Paul, and I don't really quite know how to put it into words, but it's kind of like, I like his figure and I like his character because it looks like they're going into the strangeness or fear, you know, of religion. I think Andy Dillard had a quote once that if we took any of this really seriously, we'd all be wearing crash helmets in church. We'd be strapped into our pews because what are we actually doing? If we, mm-hmm. you know, if we take our own rhetoric seriously, we're playing with like, we're daring to approach like a cosmically powerful force. And that should be terrifying if you really stop and think about it.
Absolutely. And then you get Father Paul. Boy, he gives a real Southern Baptist sermon. That, to me, that felt like less Catholic and more Southern, you know, Methodist or Baptist.
You talking about the one where it's like, oh, the fish are going to come back.
He amps it up in episode 2, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. This island's going to be resurrected.
I always thought Catholic sermons were just kind of spoken and like take 5 minutes and then you're done, but I don't know.
Depends on your Catholic.
I kind of hit fire and brimstone.
Depends on your priest.
Yeah. It was funny to see, that was a great revealing, you talk about like a cut of the eyes or that kind of thing. Everybody in the room did some bit of acting that contributed quite a bit to their character. You know, you're kind of watching the faces of like who's looking at this guy like, ugh.
Right.
Like they're not gonna like, they're still on the team, but like this guy's a little much. You know what I mean? Yeah. Versus people who were psyched.
There's more of that in episode 3. It takes it a step further in a very natural direction. I want both of you to text me after you watch episode 3 and because you're gonna comment on the character of Bev Keane and I wanna hear that comment.
Okay.
All right. Adam, real quick question to you. So the potluck they have, what's that gig pay, you think? They had live music. What's that paying you?
Well, you got to ride the ferry, so you hope that your travel
free food.
Is comped and free food, and they probably are generous with the drink tickets, right? One would hope.
Let's hope.
You got to think it's how much money is being passed around that little island?
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know.
What do the economics work like?
It's got to be low.
That is a good question because some things like sort of didn't add up, like even having a school on the island, things like that. Yeah. Like this island's doing, yeah. This island, like they can take the ferry and go to the mainland. That people do it all the time.
Oh, I rack my brain on the 2-room school. Like, how do you get to the curriculum of 1st through 6th grade in one room?
You just kind of shotgun spray out arithmetic and a little bit of English and hope that something sticks.
I guess so.
I'm surprised they can afford their own sheriff and they're not just covered by the state troopers if they feel like getting around.
Yeah, we're totally glossing over so many characters. What, you guys like the sheriff? I think he's a great character.
He was great in Bly Manor, so it was kind of that Kramer moment when you see him come back. And
really?
Woo! I liked him so much in Bly Manor.
I thought you just meant it was shocking, like when he busted in the room, Kramer.
Oh,
but,
no,
but
no,
you
no.
Meant
it was
more.
It was like, woo, yeah, this guy. And he's been really good so far.
Guys, he's got such an interesting stance. Again, that onion gets a little bit one more peel off of the layer in episode 3. I'm digging this show a lot. Now, he may drop the ball in the last four episodes. This is Flanagan, but so far he's managed to cut the fat of his previous works and build a fairly tense narrative. A little bit more scary in episode three. You get to see what this is going to be about in episode three. Okay. And it's interesting that he reveals that in episode three because there's four episodes left. And I can definitely see where it's going to go. It's just a matter of, what do you do with those remaining episodes, I suppose? So
I was going to ask, are the horror elements working for folks in the, at least I'm in honest, the first two episodes?
There were moments where I kind of rolled my eyes. Like the whole cat thing is just kind of, oh, shocker, the animals die first in this program.
What about the guy yelling into the house and get his voice repeats back to him? Is that not, did that not just creep you a little?
No.
It did to me.
It didn't really do anything for me either way. I mean, I think the what's keeping me hanging on, Donovan, I think you said this could just as well be a drama.
Yeah.
You know what, Riley and Aaron, the pregnant school teacher, their relationship and kind of to each other and to the island and whatever's going to come next is easily the most compelling thing to me.
Oh, yeah,
and
for sure.
If they start mixing in, again, to go full circle to what I said first, kind of the what would embody the horror elements of a dying island town and having to go home and face a place that you never wanted to be again. If it does something like that, then I'm into it.
I might return to this briefly in the coming weeks, maybe not. So that's, I'm all for it. Midnight Mass on Netflix. I suggest everyone check it out. If we spoiled anything for you, it wasn't a lot. The girl who keeps appearing in Riley's quote-unquote dreams or visions, whatever you want to call it. You know it's coming, but a couple times it still got me. A couple times I was freaked out by it, even though I knew it was obviously coming. So,
because that one was because it was so obviously coming, it wasn't scary at all for me. I mean, it was sad, but that's different than scary.
I think the music, the score that went with the scene is what made me jolt a little.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, let's take a break and come back on the other side with more. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Let us know who you are, what you're watching, too. We'd love to hear from everyone. As for what's going on with the Alabama Take as a whole, well, every Thursday morning, new releases of our most popular podcast, This Song Sucks. Last Thursday, they explained how Aerosmith's Dude Looks Like a Lady is awful. Can't disagree. You can find them in any place you find your podcast. As for music, our head writer, Corey Hensel, gave a review of the new Dean Where I'm album on Friday morning. I've had a chance to listen to it. I'm in agreement with her. We talked about that earlier. Go read that on the site. I did a short piece on why the problem with Jon Stewart's really good on Apple TV Plus. So we also have the MTV Challenge column every Thursday after lunch and every Friday evening into the evening hours are our college football bets, and we're doing horribly. Read that for the comedy, let me tell you.
I've lost so much money.
I mean, my God, so have I. Anyway, that's only a brief recap of the Alabama Take. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and yep, TikTok. We do a few updates from there too. Stay up to date, holler at us, let us know.
I hope the next TikTok is Donovan dancing, a little coordinated thing to Dude Looks Like a Lady.
God, I hope so.
It's not going to be coordinated.
Spontaneous. Really, let's just do a quick 30-second part on, 30-second to a minute on Squid Game check-in. Where are you two with it?
I do not know my episode count. I know that things have gone downhill quite a bit.
More so? Okay, fair. Donovan, you know what episode you're on?
I'm still on episode one, having swapped in Midnight Mass.
Gotcha.
But I'm going to watch more.
I think, okay. Yeah.
We hit Squid Game, and we've been keeping up with impeachment. That's the other, you know, we touched on that early on.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting around on the wife. She's been traveling a lot. She and I watched Impeachment together, so we've got a few episodes backed up on that.
Yeah, we got backed up, and then this last week kind of alternated between the two, so really enjoying both of them.
And here I am going to be the curmudgeon again. Something on Squid Game was spoiled for me again. This time it was Entertainment Weekly. I was simply scrolling Facebook, and after watching, I think I've watched three or four episodes now. I'm somewhere in that range. I'm going to say this, though. I think it gets a little better on that most recent episode I watched, which was four. but I don't think that this show's that good. I don't think Squid Game's that good.
I mean, it's scratching that basic thing that we love, right? This is the Colosseum in a way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's primarily due to the acting, and that might be something that's lost in translation or a cultural thing, but I don't think the actors are that good.
Interesting, because I actually thought from the first one that the acting was, this is just on the first one, but that the acting was really solid.
I think they're overplaying their hand, but I think that might be a cultural thing. I'm not sure.
You think they're overacting?
Yeah. That's it. And I'm also incredibly shocked, maybe I missed it, but I can't believe that there's not been an announcement that there's going to be an American remake of Squid Game.
Give it like 2 more weeks.
Yeah, for sure. But I do think that this might be one that would benefit from a remake just to set it in our culture. There are some things that didn't translate, I think, well, and that could be improved or at least...
You'd love to see what a localization team could do on it.
Thank you. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they do an American version, usually I think that's stupid and redundant. But here, it could work. We'll see, though. It's coming. You know it's coming. It's just a matter of when. But anyway, here's another one we set a date for a while back and we didn't get around to. But it's the HBO Max movie, The Many Saints of Newark, which is dubbed a Sopranos story, subtitled a Sopranos story. That's a subtitle David Chase himself was utterly against. I read in an interview. So do with that what you will. He hated it. In case listeners don't know, it's a crime drama that works as a prequel to the actual Sopranos show. That's the legendary show. It really kicked off prestige television or the idea of such. The movie even cast James Gandolfini's son as the teenage Tony Soprano. So, and there are a lot of the same characters, just younger versions from The Sopranos here and there, sprinkled throughout. Maybe even a little too... blatantly might be the word, a little too,
there is an element of fan service to be like, oh, it's your, you know, remember him, mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. Carm, mm-hmm. There she
mm-hmm.
is,
mm-hmm. That was stupid, I thought. Anyway, we are going to spoil it. Please watch it or just take our opinions for what they're worth if you don't want to watch it. Our conversation about this is going to intrigue me because Donovan and I are the only two, I think, that have watched all of these Sopranos shows, and Adam hasn't watched any. So two of us will be coming from the place of, hey, this is the prequel, and one of us will be coming from the place of, hey, this is a movie, right?
Little Tony.
Adam, I think you may have liked it better than us because you didn't view it as a prequel. Am I judging your reaction accordingly?
First, I need to apologize to anybody who's made it this far into the podcast that someone who talks about television has never seen The Sopranos. I feel like I've committed probably the cardinal sin of people who love prestige TV.
I think everyone else caught up with it in the pandemic. That was like the thing.
I know. I need to do the same. But, you know, I didn't have HBO in the aughts. Give me a break. Mm-hmm. So now that I am an adult with my own cable, I need to catch up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I knew as it was going along, there were some that were so obvious that even I could pick up, like when his wife is kind of unceremoniously introduced, that it felt, even not knowing who most of these people were, you could tell when the fan service was happening.
Oh, uh-huh. Really? Interesting. Yeah. Makes sense.
But I will say that as with most gangster movies, just the number of people that are all dressed vaguely the same way kept my head spinning quite a bit. So, and that's not a critique on this film in particular. It's just generally you gotta keep your names straight. You know, the first time you watch Goodfellas, it comes kind of fast. All these kind of movies. So, I was a bit lost in the, not lost, but it moved fast enough for me to never see probably the same cracks that y'all did.
Well, I'm still recovering from that scene with the power drill.
Oof.
But I keep going back and forth on this movie. Watching it, you know, sometimes it would be like scene by scene. I would, like, that was a good scene. I really like that. That one didn't work for so much for me. And the movie, it looks good, right? Like, it's well
looked
shot,
very
well
good.
Made, well presented. But also, so, and this may just be, how David Chase is, but there seemed like a, for all the fan service, there seemed like a consistent refusal to give you what you want, which made it kind of seem a little, sometimes it felt a little unfocused, or like characters were in there and I wasn't really sure why they were in there. Like the uncle character played by Ray Liotta. That was an example of a character that I wasn't really 100% sure why he was in the movie. Also, it really, much like The Sopranos itself, it had something to say about race, but I'm not sure if it said it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did it get it across in the best or most effective way possible, or did it honestly give us, the viewer, way too much credit? Maybe I'm complaining because I'm wanting something that I'm asking for something that bonks you over the head with its message, and this movie is not going to do that, and just like The Sopranos does not do that.
It did a few times with regards to race, like during the riots, which, side note on that, I don't know if y'all have listened to the Springsteen Obama podcast, but Springsteen talks about those riots being like a formative moment because it wasn't national news. It was happening right up the road from him, and how it played out in his own smaller town. And so it was interesting to see on the screen after listening to that podcast earlier this year. But you know, there were moments in that were not subtle, like when he's driving his car through basically a small war zone and they say, oh, he's white, and just wave him through. It's like, okay, we get it, you know.
You know, the only thing I think that worked in this, not only, but the only big thing that I think worked in this film was this nod toward it being all about fate. And other than that, I don't think Chase really decided on what story he wanted to tell.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree. And I keep going back and forth on this one, so I'm probably going to feel different tomorrow. But what was this movie about?
I think in the end, fate, but which makes you wonder why Harold was even in the movie. The black character of Harold, other than to check some boxes for Chase because he caught some heat from not handling race very well in the original series. I don't think it's great, and it's sad. I maybe if Chase would have just committed to a 4-episode miniseries, I think it would have been really good then. So he could have expanded Harold's role and say, in a way, here's why this man's in here. This is what his viewpoint in 1968 would have, or 71 would have been, whatever the year was. Anyway, it's sad that it didn't work, but it's also, I do think it works okay as a prequel. Some of that stuff at the very end with Tony, you could jump from there into the first episode, I think, and go on through. And having Chris being the narrator felt weird. That was very weird.
It was really strange, and I kind of liked it.
I kind of liked it, but then I was like, what? Anyway.
They're talking from a graveyard, right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I guess Adam got a big spoiler without realizing, because you've never seen The Sopranos,
well,
right?
Yeah. I never underestimate my ability to forget a plot point.
So good.
I was not worried about it. And as it was happening,
how spoiled can you be?
I like this. This is dead folks talking in the graveyard. This is fun.
That was a great. I really liked that intro. But everyone's saying, what am I doing? And why am I here?
Yeah.
I kind of wish it was so fun. I kind of wish there had been more weird stuff like that in the movie itself.
Yeah, it might have needed one or two more incidents like that. Okay, well, we're going to wind it down. That's going to be it for this week. We appreciate you listening. Visit our site. Check out all we have to offer. Leave us a review. What we'll do is we'll talk to you next Tuesday morning, bright and early. Good chance we're going to talk about Dune. And I might try to talk the guys into the Velvet Underground documentary from Apple TV Plus if I can.
Don't pull my arm. Oh, no.
Yeah, I think I can get Adam in on that. Folks, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.